Hello and welcome to Susegaat Stories from Goa. I'm your host, Clyde D'Souza. I'm a three-time published author, media professional, and a Goan who loves everything about Goa. My latest book is called Susegaat, The Goan Art of Contentment. In my podcast, I chat with some famous and some of my favorite Goans, and together we explore Goa beyond its beaches. From Feni to Fado, Kasa to Cashews, come discover Goa like you've never done before. My guest today is Goa's very famous Hansel Waz. He's the founder of Kazulo Premium Feni and a partner of Waz Enterprises, a family-owned business that has been around for two generations and which was started in their family home in Kunkoli. Hansel is a former geologist and now at the forefront and global ambassador of making Goa's heritage drink, the Feni, into a global spirit. And to that, I say viva. Welcome to the Susegaat Stories podcast, Hansel. It's great to talk to you again.
Yeah, thanks, Clyde.
I think the last time we spoke was when I was writing my book, Susegaat, and you gave me such excellent content that I think it's added some serious value to the book. So yeah, I'm happy to have you.
I still remember the conversation. I was by the docks, sitting outside, breaking oysters because we were trying to actually do a pairing with oysters and Feni.
Wow. Okay, we'll talk about that more then. So before I get into the interview, what I like to do, because this is a podcast and it's only audio, right? So I like to ask my guests where they're from in Goa and if they can just kind of describe their surroundings. So please tell us where you're from. And
so I am actually a South Goan completely. It's a greener part. I mean, I'm just 5 minutes from the beach. I'm 30 seconds from the hill across my house.
Right. And if I'm not mistaken, you're from Kansauli, right?
No, I'm actually from Kunkoli. We're known as the fighters, the warriors. Oh. We come from Kunkoli. We're supposed to be a hot-headed bunch. I live in Kolwa-Benauli border. Benauli is supposed to be the place where they always say these are the mad people. So a lot of mad people in the area. So, and my mom's from Moira. That's okay. Where I spent a lot of my initial years. Mm. Moira is also known for Moira bananas. It's going to be a little crazy there as well. It's interesting. So I've got a little craziness and a little hothead in me altogether.
Nice. So right now you're mad and you're fighting for Feni.
Yeah, fighting for Feni.
Brilliant. Yeah. Okay, now Hansel, I didn't know this, but when I was doing the research, right, and I came across this article which said that in 2018, apparently you had a near-death experience, after which this image and a vision came to you, one of Garofaos and a Feni seller. And I was like, okay, wow, I didn't know about this. So can you tell us a little bit about this crazy, amazing story?
So I started the Feni journey much before. And I think there was this drive from within. So I was just doing things. I was working on a Feni brand. I was working on improving quality, working on creating cooperatives to start making Feni, and with an emphasis for tradition. And that's what I was doing. And at the same time, I was also buying Garrafaoish. So Garrafa means bottle in Portuguese. Hmm. Garrafao means big bottle. And Garrafaoish are many bottles, big bottles. So I was buying these many Garrafaoish all over the place. But I was still working overseas, so I still had money and I was still doing things. I was working as a geologist then. And it's a well-paying job. And then I quit. And I think I put a little extra pressure on myself. And I did not know that we have a congenital defect in the heart, in the family, in the heart. And so I didn't think full of energy doing everything. And suddenly I got this heart attack. It was not a heart attack. Started with a heart attack. I reached the hospital and my heart stopped. My heart stopped for 18 minutes. I know this sounds really weird. It sounds really weird, but my heart did stop for 18 minutes. I was revived 3 times. They gave me the defibrillator and then I was finally revived. And I came back. You don't come back. And that's one of the biggest things I learned.
Right.
People say don't get a second chance. I got a second chance. And then when I was still on life support, one doctor, she came and she thought I was unconscious. I mean, I was like in sleeping, but I was actually conscious. But I had all these machines on me. I couldn't talk. And she was just narrating to the other doctor about what happened to me.
Right.
And that was the first time I realized something like that happened to me, that I was out for 18 minutes. I come back and I was shocked. I was in complete disbelief. I couldn't believe what had happened.
Yeah.
I think the miracle was that my brain came back totally normal, but I was physically out of sorts. I couldn't walk. I couldn't. I could read. I couldn't make sense of it. I couldn't write. But there was this enormous will that came back to push myself back. I was mumbling about getting the Feeny thing going all through those dark hours in those, that night that happened. And I was just when I just revived, I was apparently just talking only about Feeny and continuing the work I'd started before I and I didn't know what was happening. That's all I was talking about. But I had that vision. I'll explain to you what actually happened.
Yeah, please.
Your heart stops. In a heart attack, your heart slows down.
Okay.
When I was stopped for 18 minutes, when my heart stopped for 18 minutes, your heart stops completely. And so your muscle, your heart is not a brain, it's a rhythmic muscle. So I lost my rhythm. So I had to start all over again. I had to train my heart again. What it is to sit, what it is to walk, what it is to run, what it is to think. Because when you're thinking, I need to run, your heart will pump that way. My heart did not know anything to do that. But what was interesting is when that oxygen, I think this is what actually happened. When that oxygen was deprived in my brain, I think it gave my brain a shock. I was thinking a million miles an hour. I mean, I'm telling you, it was boom, 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 boom. For the next, I think, 6 months, my mind was just booming with ideas, just booming with thoughts. And everything was just, it's like you're going in a fast forward in a video game. It was something like that.
My God. Okay.
Yeah. It's something like The Matrix.
Yeah. And, I mean, I have goosebumps right now. Just hearing you tell us about this.
And then I had this vision. And this is very interesting. I was lying on my bed and I suddenly had this vision of this room with all these garifoys lit up from behind with a long table inside. And I had to do this. And I realized every time I woke up, something would go. So I woke up and I just saw the envelope by the side. Some mail had come and I couldn't read. So the mails were just there. I picked up a pen and I just drew and I passed out. Then I woke up the next day and then I would keep on passing out. You know, that period was very... So a few days later, I mean, a couple of months later, I had that envelope and got my workman and we built it. And what was interesting was nobody knew what it was. My mason did not know. Nobody knew. And nobody knew. And, you know, it's a crazy thing. Nobody knew what it was because it was all in my head. Only I could see it.
Yeah.
So when you look at that whole, the fazenda, if you've ever been to the my Feeny distillery and everything, all that was in my head. And it just unfolded, unfolded, unfolded. Amazing. And I came out with the whole Feeny experience. I came out. And that's one thing I took off after the whole thing, was that life doesn't give you a second chance. And you really don't know what it means when you say live your life. Everyone lives life they think they live their life. But there's one thing what I realize is that you've got to live your life, I mean, to the fullest. And it has a totally different meaning when you've been through what I've been. It has its perils as well because I can push myself too much. But it's something that I've always done. I have to live my life. And I think the before and after the heart attack is completely different. You see the work that I was doing before was like a normal person's life.
Right.
When you see what's happened after 2017 is superhuman. Everyone says, I mean, whoever's been charting what I've done, it's like superhuman. My sales have increased. My the work I've done is exponential. I've changed the face of the industry in many ways. But I've not done it alone. I mean, as much as I would like the thing, a lot of people have facilitated that.
Wow. Honestly, I had goosebumps listening to the entire thing. And thank you for sharing something so personal. And I think the listeners will, you know, get a lot out of this entire part that you just said. And, you know, what it has kind of brought about, which is the Fazenda Cazulo, right? And that the dining experience, which I personally yet have to experience and which I will very shortly, I'm sure. That was just amazing. Now, the other thing that I want to ask you is now, for me personally, right, when I grew up as a kid, I remember, of course, roasting cashews in the summer with my Nana. And she used to tell us to be very careful when you're plucking the cashew fruits or picking it up from the ground, not to eat its bonk, right? And now for the listeners who don't know, bonk means bum in Konkani. And she would say, bonk hai naka. Okay, and I was like, what? And you know, it's such a weird thing to say to a kid. And then that's when she would say that don't eat the bottom part of it where the seed grows out from because that's sticky and it's sappy and it can stick onto your tongue and all of that. So you need to eat the cashew fruit from the other end. Now, can you tell us a little bit, because you've grown up also probably doing the same thing and you've lived with the family that has been creating Feeny. What is the cashew fruit and what is it and what are the different juices that one can get out of it? If you can just tell our listeners a little bit about that.
Yeah, so interestingly, the cashew is not a normal fruit. It's actually a false fruit. It's a peduncle. Right. It's a stem that is actually swelled up into a fruit. It's actually from the Amazon. It's not even from Goa. And that's what I find so fascinating, that a fruit that came from the Amazon, Goa has embraced, and our people have embraced it in a way that the world has never known as and has never seen before. And so I don't use the word bonk or bum. I use the French word. Derriere, so it is. There is some cashew etiquette, so that's one of the things that we realize. So one of the things that the whole Fazenda experience is also about educating the people about the fruit, about the plant, about the tree. What's interesting about the leaves smell of raw mango and green guava. Have you ever smelled it? So what's interesting is we got the cashew from Brazil, and we made cashew feni out of it. But when I went to Brazil, I realized cachaça is their national drink. And we gave them sugarcane. So interesting how sugarcane went from Goa to Brazil, became their national drink. They gave us as cachaça. And they gave us cashew and became cashew feni here. And we do nothing with it. We make, we just have Ghana juice fellows making sugarcane juice. And
crazy,
And they make cashew juice there. That's all they do.
Yeah, so now Hansel, can you tell me, like, when was the first time you had feni? As a person who grew up, you know, with your family in the business, what was your favorite feni memory?
So, you know, my feni memory is that my grandfather used to drink feni every time in Moira. Every evening, he would drink his feni in the evening, no matter
what. One cup.
One cup. He'd have his glass, wears long pants, wear a small banyan, sit in the balcony and have his feni. So that was what I remember. But what I actually remember tasting feni was as a kid. So we had the small factory, we actually factory. It was a small unit, and we'd had all these women bottling the feni and stuff. And whenever I went and played in the afternoon, they would come and they'd give me a small goodie, or like a small cap, cap full of feni. And they would run, catch me. There was one girl, I still remember her name, Sibia. I don't remember where she's now. Sibia would catch me, like grab hold of me and just give me a shot of feni. Now, why did they design? This is completely different. This is our culture. So in Goa, alcohol is very ubiquitous with our culture. And it's used as a tonic. And they believe that, I mean, everyone believes that feni reduces the chance of getting stomach worms. Worms are common in India. And so so she believed she was actually doing me good. She was giving me a small shot of feni every time. And
did she know?
I was indoctrinated. I was almost like obliques back in the day. So feni every time. But it was a nice way of actually, I hated it that time. I mean, any kid would not like feni.
Yes, it's too strong.
So most people were introduced that when that is my two earliest memories of feni.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Now, can you tell our listeners what exactly is the taste of feni? What exactly is the taste of feni? Because for me, it's like a strong pungentness. I can't really describe it any other way. So what is the taste of feni and why is it drunk in the monsoons? Why do Goans love to drink it in the monsoons?
I've got 26 fenis to talk about, but I'll tell you very quickly. I'll tell you very quickly. We have a drinking culture and a cycle in Goa. That's very interesting. So we'll start with after the monsoons. So after the monsoons, what happens is the coconut toddy comes. The best time for coconut toddy is after the monsoons. September, October, November is when the trees produce the most amount of toddy. So all of Goa drinks coconut feni. So then after that, by December, Jan, you start making your conservas. So everyone drinks liqueurs. It's colder in our climate. It's supposed to be our winter. It is not a winter compared to any other part of the world, but it's a tropical cold season. So we feel cold, and so we need to have something like a coffee or a ginger conserva. So it's a conserva season in Christmas, New Year. Every party drink would serve that. Then you come to the hot season. In the hot season, you cannot drink a hard drink. You cannot drink something high in high percentage of alcohol. You need to drink something light. So while the rest of the world drinks beer, we are drinking urak.
Right.
Yeah. And so urak is this light drink. And I always say, you know, when urak season is hit is when beer sales drop and limca sales go up. Because
limca or taan, right? Taan is the local version of limca.
Taan is actually what is most commonly mixed, if not always mixed with urak. So
it's beautiful. I love it.
Yeah. In the hot season, you drink urak. And then finally, and of course, it's the weakest time for coconut toddy because of the ground is dry. So toddy production is less. So nobody drinks coconut. They're drinking cashew. And the coconut toddy producers go into making vinegar. And then finally, when you come the first day of the monsoon, and this is a tradition, the first day of the monsoon, all the bars would say, that's it, over, kalas, they'll put all their urak away, and they'll
that's it.
They'll put their feni out. So the first rains, when the rains fall, everyone is drinking their feni, and that is the culture. Nobody drinks urak after the first rains. You'd be a
yeah, it's looked down upon. I mean, you know, you'll be chastised if you kind of, you know, ask for urak as soon as the rains hit. You'll be outcast.
Yeah, so everyone drinks cashew. So it's interesting. They're drinking cashew immediately after cashew season. So what actually is what's actually happening is that the farmers are getting a good price. But what happens when you're drinking cashew after you're in the monsoons? The toddy production is very good, but low in sugar. So you can't produce that much coconut feed because the yield is low. It's very interesting how the drinking culture coincided with the local climate. Yeah,
and the agriculture and all of that, basically. It's in sync with that.
Yeah, in sync with that. So we had a whole drinking culture, and you had different kind of feni. So there was no kind of feni that you drink whenever you wanted. You could drink whatever you wanted.
Right.
Like, whatever you wanted.
As per the season. Yeah, okay. That's nice. And I'm glad that we are having this conversation now because the monsoon is just about setting in Goa, especially. Great, yeah. So now the next part of it is that what is the perception that feni needs to have? Is it like a celebratory drink? What is it?
No, so I think, see, every drink has its own niche. I think we'll never be a mainstream spirit, and we should never be a mainstream spirit because we cannot satiate the world's thirst. So we will be one of those drinks that will just be on the side. We'll be on the sidelines. Right. We'll be that one drink that will just be, you've had a whiskey, you've had a vodka, have a feni, something different. I don't want people to drink feni every day because we don't produce that much. Drink the feni maybe once a week or something. It's something like that. And it's got an exoticness. You know what's interesting? You're the smallest state in Goa, we're the smallest on a speck on the west coast of India.
Yeah.
And we're making a drink from a fruit that is from the Amazon in a restricted geographic area in a unique process. That is what is fascinating. Now to answer your question, I believe feni should be this drink that you serve after your friends have left.
the closest friends, the closest among the closest.
Yeah.
Right. It's only to those select few.
Yeah,
that's a nice way to put it. Yeah. Now coming to you've also just what you initially said, like, you know, the vision that you had after your heart attack and everything, where you saw this thing in your head, the Cazulo Fazenda, which is basically called the Cashew Farm, right? Which is a fruit to feni dining experience, where you take people through this entire thing, where they taste feni, they see the feni cellar, and then there's lunch that is had at the bank of a river bed, if I'm not mistaken. So tell us a little bit about that and what happens over there. What do people, experience?
What actually happened was I set up the fazenda. So we came out of my sickness and everything, built up the fazendas, spent a lot of resource, time, energy, did everything. We did a few trial runs and we were just ready for the first season in 2020. And bang, we had...
I know. the dreaded pandemic, yeah.
3 years just went by and what do? You sink or you swim. I think you get pushed to the corner and you've got to think out of the box. Because now we created the whole feni cellar, where we used to get people to sit inside and taste. And we had gatherings of 50 people, 60 people coming together. And we suddenly realized big gatherings cannot happen. We suddenly realized people don't want to go into closed, confined areas. They wanted to be out.
Yeah.
So what do you do? So I needed something spectacular. And then we had the spring. We had a spring in the property. So we said, okay, let's... essentially, we don't have an air condition, so it's a cheaper version of an air condition. So we set up a table, and I had experimented this with one before. So the thing is, when you talk about cashew, even for a seasoned cashew drinker or a seasoned cashew eater, any part of the world, if you tell anyone to describe the smell and taste of cashew or describe the smell and taste of coconut, it becomes very difficult. And if you've ever been for a whiskey tasting or wine tasting, I remember the first time when they talked about gooseberries and blueberries and cranberries. And for us who come from the tropics, a gooseberry, a blueberry, and a cranberry all look the same. The only colors, they're not taste. We don't know the difference. And so my friend Alvaro had come for my tasting and he said, Hansel, you know what would be amazing? When you talk about the flavors of feni, if you said orange, for example, and I could pick up an orange and smell an orange, that would be amazing. And that kind of struck me. And I said, why don't I just do that? So we don't do a lunch. What we do, we set a table in the water. One is because it brings your body temperature down. So you can smell and taste better. So your feet, bare feet are in the water in gravel. Right. So you're completely immersed. You're completely cool. It also brings you to your normal senses. So we're taking control of you. And when you're sitting in the water, your attention is drawn to the platter in front of you. The platter is set, it's a platter that is designed, which has all the flavors of what you're going to drink. So all the flavors that you're going to, what are there in your glass, are actually spread out on the platter. And it's enough to fill you up. It's like what you do in a wine tasting, but very differently. And so we go and taste the cashew and the coconut and everything. And you get the flavors coming through and you taste it. So it's very interesting how it goes by.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great experience. Now, the other thing that I've noticed, right, especially about Cazzulo, is that the first time I saw that bottle, it was very different, very well packaged, beautifully designed, just the shape of the bottle itself. And then when I looked at it, I was like, okay, this looks very, very international. Because we were just, as growing up, we were just used to two or three different types of Fennies that just honestly just came like in a plastic bottle, right? And suddenly to see this beautifully designed, packaged glass bottle that just looks lovely on your shelf, I was like, okay, wow, this is great. And now Goa seems to be becoming this distillery brewery capital of India, right? Whether it's Paul John whiskey or Greater Than Gin. So moving a little bit away now from Feni, what is your take on Goa becoming the distillery or brewing capital of India, and what has caught your interest, and what do you think about all of this?
I think it is just it's great. I mean, Goa is this place which has always been welcoming. We were the first people the first Europeans came to Goa. And this is even before the Portuguese. The first Europeans were the Turks.
Yeah.
The Turks. So we are the Turks who came, then we are the Portuguese coming. There's been this great confluence of ideas and people and stuff. So I'm great. I'm happy that it's sparking such interesting ideas. It's always been this cauldron. The question is how they look at it. I think it might be contentious, but I think a lot of them, not every one of them, a lot of them look at it very opportunistically. I don't think so. They are there because of anything. They're just there because a lot of them are light asset places. They don't have to invest in a distillery. They don't have to invest in management. They can just plug and play.
So it's low capital. It's a low capital, for them.
Yeah, and Goa is very, you can go to any other part of India. You'll never meet the excise commissioner. Let alone talk to the assistant or even the guard or anybody. In Goa, you can walk up to the commissioner and talk. And I think what's interesting about Goa is you can talk to them. They listen to you. They'll be very forthcoming. They're nice people. I think Goans ask people, money doesn't talk. It's the kind of people you personally and the ideas you have. I think in that way, Goa facilitated all this to happen. Again, I say not everyone is like that, but I think a lot of them are opportunistic. They're just there for the time. We'll see in 5 years' time and what's going to happen. Are they still going to be in Goa? Are they going to move shop to another place? What's interesting about a few of these companies, their companies are not even based out of Goa. They're based in Bangalore or Delhi or some other place. They're not based in Goa. So they're just doing production here. So yes, they celebrate the Goa story simply because it's easier to say Goa than to say...
Easier to sell that.
It's easier to sell Goa. So Goa is this international... See, Goa has been India's international destination for centuries. You can't say Haryana, you can't say some other place. Who would
you
want
have to say Goa?
Who's going to say my liquors come out of Patna? You're going to say I don't want
that. Yeah, there's no story there.
Or Naigaon or some place like that. You're going to say no, I don't want that. You're a nice story. You say Goa. And so that's essentially what has actually happened. But But interestingly, I'm looking at it very objectively, so there's no malice against anybody. But what this has actually done is it's actually sparked a revolution from a view of bringing the best of India's talent to Goa. You got the now best bartenders in Goa. You got the best food and drink in Goa. A lot of investment in Goa. It has been good. It has been...
Yeah, that's the bright side of it, I guess. Better mixologists and kind of the culinary aspect also is kind of rising because of that.
Yeah. So it's kind of shifted that whole focus from scattered all over the country now straight onto Goa. So it's been it's been good. It's given us that kick. To kind of kickstart this whole revolution and probably take Goa in a different direction. And it's brought Feni to the spotlight as well. So, I mean, because for me now, I don't compete with someone in Delhi or someone in Bangalore or someone in Bombay. I'm competing with my fellows in Goa now. So for me, I'm fighting for shelf space. I'm fighting for bar menus. I'm fighting for bar takers. So, I mean, so it's interesting. I'm fighting for it to be make fancy cocktails as well.
Right.
So it's an interesting place. And so I'm saying, so it's a good thing as well. But... what upsets me as a Goan, sometimes it rubs off when some of them, not all of them, but some of them, they talk arrogantly about it. You know that they're just here only just for the name and nothing else.
Yeah. It's the opportunity. Yeah. They're kind of using it as a short sell. And maybe we can just hope that some of them, you know, on the bright side of it, maybe they can look at it as a long-term venture and the ecosystem, basically building the ecosystem.
Yeah, very few of them live in Goa. Some of them have moved on to Goa, and that's a great sign. But some of them don't even care about living in Goa. They live somewhere else. Yeah, just in for the ride. So that's it, yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting take. I didn't think of it from that perspective. But I think when a person just sees it, someone who's a tourist and he sees all of these things, he doesn't know this backstory of it. He's just looking at it as a... He thinks that it's something from Goa, that it's originated in Goa. He doesn't know the backstory. Yeah.
Let me tell you, Indians are the best at selling anything. The top CEOs of the world today are Indians because we can sell anything and everything.
Jugadus.
Yeah, we can sell everything. We sell the most amount of whiskey. We sell, so we are great at selling everything. We sell scotch, we sell champagne, we sell everything, but we cannot sell our own products. So that's what actually happens. We need to now start selling our own product. Yeah. Now, to answer the question which you asked me about packaging, when I first, this was a question, this thing that happened to me when I was in Tonga. I was working as a geologist, and I went on a holiday to Tonga, a small island in the Pacific. And I suddenly saw this, they were selling coconut oil, shabby bottle, plastic bottle. And that immediately took me back to Goa. Everyone drank scotch. You had a nice bottle of whiskey, a nice bottle of vodka. And you always kept that feni in a plastic Sprite or Coke bottle, bottle inside. And for me, that immediately hit. And I said, no, we have to change this. So I over a long period, I came out with this whole packaging, and I wanted it to be international. And the first question I got from everyone was, Hansel, have you done too much? This is too fancy for a Goan. Will Goans buy it? And I was like, damn well, they should. I said, this is what it is. What are you going to price it at? And that time it was 500 rupees. And 500 rupees that time was a lot of money for feni.
People might think you've gone mad, like especially the Goan locals would be like, what?
Like, this is too much. I can get feni for 100 rupees. Yeah. What is 100 rupees? But for me, I gave, at least at that time, I gave the people an opportunity to say, yes, we've got a feni that looks international and you can be proud of, and you don't have to keep it in a plastic bottle. You keep a Kazula bottle inside. That was the first thing. But you know, the bottle shape was specifically chosen. It's an old gin bottle. I don't know if you know that during the Napoleonic Wars, the Portuguese got really scared, and they wanted India to be, Goa to be protected. So they asked the British to come and protect Goa. And that's why you had the British soldiers stationed in Goa for about 5 years. And they drank a lot of gin, and they left a lot of gin bottles in Goa. And so what happened, we stored feni in Garrafão. But we poured feni into small gin bottles called Buca bottles, and we kept them at home. That's why we have a British cemetery in Dona Paula. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah, so everyone wonders, why do we have a British cemetery in Goa? But it was because of that. But what happened was the British left, and they left behind their bottles. And we stored feni in them. So for a lot of Goans, the Garrafão was the storage bottle, and the gin bottle, which is the Kazula-shaped bottle, was actually the bottle that we poured feni out for your daily use.
Oh, that's interesting. So the shape of this bottle actually comes from
that bottle. Yeah. So we wanted to be an authentic representation of what we are and who we are. So it was not something I just pulled out of the air. We had a different shape. If you look at the colors are very Goan colors, the red color, the green color. We used the motifs, the word Kazula. We were one of the first brands to use a Konkani name. Kazula is a Konkani name for firefly. Which means so the warming glow when you drink feni in your chest is just like the glow of the fire. So we use Konkani names back then, and people said Konkani name. People will take a Kazula name; they want an English name. It was an interesting journey, but we came out with the product in the end.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you stuck to your guns, and therefore we have this beautiful drink that I'm holding in my hand, and now it's the last sip of it. So maybe it's time for a refill after that. But right now I want to move on to my next segment. Okay, so which is the segment that a lot of the listeners on this podcast, right, Hansel, are saying that they like this segment because it seems like a dessert. It's like a slice of bibimbap after the main course. That's how I like to look at it. So yeah, now on to my Susegaard secret segment. Okay, so the Susegaard secret is basically where you just tell me what brings you to your happy place and what is your Susegaard secret.
My Susegaard secret, I think that my whole family knows. I need to have my own time. So for my Susegaard secret is every afternoon, no matter what, I need to take a siesta. My office knows it, my staff knows it, everybody knows that. My wife knows it. Everyone knows. It's at one period in time where I'm not necessarily sleeping, but it's that contemplative time where I think I'm probably I switched off from everything, and that's what I need. A dark room, just calm down, just brings your thing, and then I'm ready.
Recharge your batteries. Yeah,
that's completely. So I think had that siesta not been there, I don't know what I would have done.
Great. Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but it's really helpful. Yeah. Okay, now my next question, and one of my guests, I mean, I guess you know him, publisher Frederick Noronha.
Oh.
The question is basically, what is the meaning of love? And he said that love is a chemical, which I was like, okay, wow. So now, since you're someone who deals with spirits, right, what is the meaning of love to you, Hansel?
I think what my teacher in college, I studied in St. Xavier's, she said love is blind, cockeyed and dumb. So it makes you do something, and I think that's what very much it is. I mean, when you fall in love with something, it comes, you go head over heels, and there's nothing to explain. It's right. So intangible, it's so deep that it can give you this energy that can take you much further.
Super. Okay, great. So this stops the love is a chemical response. Yeah. All right, my next segment again, it's a rapid fire segment. It's fun. I've dubbed it the Uzo round. So it's called the Uzo round. Uzo means fire. For the
Uzo, listeners. Uzo.
Yeah, Uzo.
Uzo.
Right. So, yeah. So, five quick questions with one word answers. All right, so here we go. If you can expand, what liquor, not necessarily Feni, would you want to create next?
And make an Amaro.
Okay, what's that?
Amaro is like a bitter drink, a herbal bitter drink like Jägermeister or a Fernet Branca or a Chartreuse. It's a herbal drink, herbal liquor.
Okay, and any particular herb? Any particular herb?
No, so I believe we are in the tropics and we have so many interesting ingredients in Goa. I mean, we definitely should make an Amaro.
Okay, looking forward to that. Wow. All right. What food dish goes best with Feni according to you?
With Cajun Feni, it's a nice fruit salad, a good fruit salad, a lot of pineapple. With coconut Feni, it's chori spam.
Oh, okay, interesting. All right, this is an interesting question. Your favorite drinking buddy?
Buddy? So, one of my, I've got three drinking buddies, Melvin Pays, and I've got Orville and Alvaro. We've been friends in school. We drank soda back in the day, now we drink anything. But these
lovely.
Are my kids. Yeah, we love drinking together.
Salute to them, and yeah, wow, great. All right. Now, like a lot of people are starting to make dishes out of a certain product, right? Like they'll take an Oreo and they'll make a milkshake out of it, or they'll make Maggi pakoras, right? So now if you have to think out of the box and make a Feni cocktail with using some other food product or something like that, then what do you think that could be? Like an out of the box Feni cocktail.
Yeah, so I think we did it, and actually it's one of our most celebrated cocktails. It's the Patolio. So Patolio is this quintessential Goan dessert made of turmeric leaf on which
jaggery.
You put a coconut rice paste, and then you put jaggery, and then you seal it. It's got this beautiful flavor. So we deconstructed this cocktail, and we made it with Feni. So we used coconut Feni, we used coconut milk, we used jaggery syrup, and we took turmeric leaf extract. We made this beautiful cocktail. I think that's going to be the Feni cocktail that will crack open the world. It's going to be the cocktail that's going to be the tip of the spear when we go international.
Wow, I mean, that just sounds so great, because I've had Patayo and I've had Feni separately.
Yeah.
Now I'm just wondering whether I need to just dip the Patayo into my Feni and try it, because this, what you just said is too complicated for me to do.
No, it's very complicated. I'm glad you understood. It's very complicated.
Yeah.
It's like drinking an alcoholic version of the Patayo. So it's amazing. I think it's the best cocktail we've ever made. Superhuman effort by the team.
Yeah.
But I think it's great. There was a young bartender called Rohan Barbosa who invented it, but he didn't use Feni. He used a vodka. So I told him, can you use a coconut Feni? And he was not sure. He had to ask permission from his mentor. Should I use Hansel Singh to use a coconut Feni? And then we used it. And the next thing is history. Yeah.
Boom. Yeah. So where can someone taste this if someone wants to have a Patayo Feni?
Only two places. One is Bar de Giro, that where we serve it regularly on the menu. It's part of the one of the drinks on the menu. And the other one is at the Fazenda. We serve these drinks two places.
Ah, lovely.
It's an unparalleled drink. There's nothing like it. Yeah.
Lovely. Okay. My next question is, we'll end with the favorite Konkani phrase and an example of it. What is your favorite Konkani phrase?
My favorite Konkani phrase is Kature Bhaji. it's one of those famous lines, Abe Faria.
I've mentioned it in my book. Yeah, it's a fascinating story.
So it's one of those phrases that I think as Hellfast. With me for a long time.
Tell us what it means. Tell my listeners what Kathur Rebaji means.
In Konkani, literally means cut the vegetable. Cut the bhaji.
Which is get on with it, right? That's the application.
No, it means get on with it. Be bold, be steadfast.
Yes. Be confident and move ahead. Do what you have to do.
Yeah, so it's one of those lines that has held in me. And I'm not a confident... I'm a shy guy in many ways. I'm also... confidence you develop over time. I've always been nervous many times in my life, and so I've always used this line. Before I put my best out, I'll just be saying Kathore Bhaji, just do it and go
just
out there.
Do it. Yeah, which is what Tabe Faryas dad told him when he had to give a speech, right?
I always say Kathore Bhaji, and just go ahead and give your speech. Just do whatever you have to.
Be confident and do what you have to do. Lovely. What a way to end this beautiful conversation that we've had. Hansel, I could listen to you for hours, and I'm glad we had such a nice, deep, fun, invigorating conversation over a drink remotely.
Yeah, likewise. It's been very interesting. My first podcast, by the way, so... I'm
happy that you enjoyed it, and it was great, and thank you for being so passionate about Feni, seeing the light and doing everything that you're doing and becoming one of Goa's greatest ambassadors and storytellers for Feni across the world. And it was fun to talk to you a couple of years back, and it's fun to talk to you again, and I'm hoping to see you soon. We haven't met, which is crazy, but I hope to meet you at Fazenda Cazulo soon.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming on to Susikar Stories from Goa podcast. I hope we can do another one soon with more of your expressions and different types of Feni. And Hansel, I always end with saying these two words to everyone. So, thank you for coming to the podcast, and Mogasuni. Guys, I hope you enjoyed this heady conversation on Goa's much-loved drink. Please try it the next time you're in Goa, and keep listening and subscribe to Susikar Stories from Goa podcast, where we bring you some more amazing guests like Hansel. Thank you, and Mogasuni. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of Susegad Stories from Goa. Do subscribe if you're a new listener, and join a community of people who love and live the Goan lifestyle. Again, I'm Clyde D'Souza, and for more Goan content, you can follow me on Instagram at Clyde D'Souza Author. This podcast is brought to you by Bound, a company that helps you grow through stories. Follow them at Bound India on all social platforms for updates on this podcast, or take a look at their other podcasts. Mogasuni, and see you soon.